What if drinking less didn't feel like a compromise, but a treat? I'm your host, Ruth Fittock, and in this episode of the Tomorrow Brands podcast, I'm talking to Bethan Higson, founder of Mother Root, a bold, feel-good, non-alcoholic aperitif. Bethan spent the last 6 years building the brand with an approach that feels refreshingly patient and purposeful. We dig into the rebrand that took years to get right, how TikTok isn't just for Gen Z, and why D2C is the best way to educate a new market, and the power in growing slowly with intention.
Hello, Bethan. Thanks so much for coming on today. I'm super excited to talk to you and catch up and hear how everything's going. Before we get into it, it'd be great to hear a little bit more about you and your background and how you came to start Mother Root.
Yeah. Hi, Ruth. So nice to be chatting to you again. It's been a while. So I'm Bethan. I am the founder of Mother Root, which is a non-alcoholic aperitif that makes you feel good. It's a brand that I've founded and started 6 years ago. Actually, the idea goes back even further than that. My background is in drinks and hospitality, and I've always been obsessed with flavour and good food and everything that goes together to enjoy life better. I think it's a fundamental part of being human. And the genesis of creating Mother Root came from me spotting a real need for something that was bold and complex and full of flavour that wasn't alcoholic whilst I was pregnant. So that's why it goes back 10 years, because I've got two little boys. And when I was pregnant with the first, who's just about to turn 9, I really experienced for the first time that gap for something that was really bold and interesting, and decided to start playing around in the kitchen and making something for myself. And then over time, I could see the growth, the beginnings of the growth of the non-alcoholic category, but could also see that I had approached it in a really different way to what was out there on the market. What was out there on the market didn't appeal to me. And so I saw that there was potentially really a lot of value in the direction I was taking it, and ultimately eventually plucked up the courage to launch it as a business. And here we are 6 years later, and things are really motoring. And I think it's as the non-alcoholic category has developed, as we have grown in confidence and understanding of our customer, and things, just the timing really coming together.
I've got my eldest is about to turn 9 as well. And I remember when I was pregnant with him, it was just fresh lime and soda. That was all you had to drink.
Elderflower, if it was a special occasion, in a champagne flute.
Oh, no more elderflower. The thing, I love Mother Root. I was telling you just before we started that so many of my friends do too, because it genuinely makes you feel good. It's not just tastes amazing. It does taste amazing, but you get this like little rush or little kick from the ginger and everything in it. Feels good. It genuinely makes you feel good.
I think that's it. I think the category really started, and it makes sense, by replicating alcoholic drinks that people know and love, but taking out the alcohol. It really told people, this is when you have it, this is how you drink it. But as it's developed, I think really people want to feel good, that sense that they're not sacrificing, actually adding something in that's pleasurable, but also does make them feel good from the inside out. And that for us comes from the quality of the ingredients, the nature of the ingredients, really strong ginger and apple cider vinegar that also just helps energize you and helps in many other ways for your health. So I think it's that combination that makes people drink it, enjoy it for the pleasure, but also that sense that they're doing themselves some good, which is an extra added benefit, which is the next step, I think, for the category in many ways.
You mentioned you had the idea 9 years ago, you started building 6 years ago, just gone into retail. It feels like you've just hit this sort of tipping point moment. So talk to me about that growth. Was it an intentional choice to start off in D2C and build slowly? Has it just been how things have panned out?
I would say the latter, very much. I come from the industry, the drinks industry. I had worked in that industry for about a decade. And online at the time when I started, just let's say it's 2019 was my first full year, wasn't a big part of especially the alcohol drinks industry. And so it wasn't something that I had a lot of awareness of, how to build a brand online. My approach in the early days was building the brand bottom up. So getting my first listing was in beautiful restaurants like 2 Michelin star Ledbury and Hawksmoor, and local favourites where I am in London, like Forts of Wine. And that was really important. I think that gave the kind of nod to the tastemaker credibility that that I think irrespective of where you build and channel, I think that is really important. But I was seeking to then find the distributor and then build from independent retail up. The pandemic, obviously, as with everyone, shifted everyone online, and I had to learn pretty quickly how we distribute through that channel. But yeah, it's been a big squiggly line. It wasn't intentional. It was throwing a lot at the wall, seeing what sticks. And after those couple of years of really focusing and learning about direct consumer, I could see that was the category that was growing, that there were opportunities to really learn quickly about who our customer was. And I could see that the biggest obstacle for what we were doing was customer education. And that was much, much faster to be done directly with our end consumer than it would have been with the gatekeepers in the way, who are actually not personally our customer, and then maybe also need the education that yes, those customers truly exist, except that you don't really have the data to win them round, and they just have to believe in what you're saying and trust. And that's, so it was a really hard process to go through that tradition, those traditional channels, in a category that was new, that didn't have any other data from other brands to back it up. So definitely when you're doing something that is more innovative and different within the category, I think direct consumer is a really powerful and probably at the moment the most important channel in which to start and build and get those data points and be able to slightly test, learn, experiment, pivot, refine your comms much more quickly than you can in the more traditional channels.
And then did you take that to those retailer conversations and say, this is our proof of concept, essentially. So look, this, I can show you that it works because this is our community. This is what they're saying. This is the
Exactly. But I think we also, one of the main things that I have learned over the past few years is focus was really important. So we weren't in a rush. Once we saw the growth of direct consumer, we weren't really in a rush to then jump into the retail space. It was, right, this is the channel that's working. We need to understand how we continue to scale efficiently in this channel and how we can grow to a pretty reasonable size so that we have the audience that we can then drive into retail later. So we just held back. We weren't in a rush to go into retail, which actually took a lot of, personally, a lot of confidence over the years to be able to listen to my gut telling me that was the right strategy, because you hear a lot of advice from different people who have been there, done that, but all in different iterations of different brands. And certainly I think as a personal growth journey that I've been on is in the early days, I think I listened too much to other people or lacked the confidence to know this is a different case study. I'm sure that is really good and helpful advice, but it doesn't apply here, and this is what we need to do. So over time, I've got better at just being able to confirm and understand that, yeah, I know the business better than potentially others. And that was the right strategy. And it's proving to have been, because since we've moved into retail, we've seen amazing rate of sale. And I think that's only because we've spent those last couple of years building the audience through our online channels, and they're now delighted to be able to find it in Ocado and Waitrose and are going out and buying it there because it's way easier and it's exactly where they want to buy it. But we couldn't have done that directly into those channels. It wouldn't have worked in the same way.
There's a couple of things I love in that. And the first is patience and that sort of realism. I think there are no such things as overnight successes in FMCG. The brands that you see, there'll probably be people who've seen you guys explode in a way and think that this is brand new and not realize that you've been studiously building that behind the scenes for 6 years and this is just your moment now. So I think that's really important to talk about more, and that not rushing into retail. It's one thing winning the listing, but that's where the hard work begins, as you guys know. That rush, I think that's a nice counter to that. And also that piece about advice and knowing what to listen to and what not to, because there's just no one size fits all when you're building a brand. If there was, we'd all be billionaires doing it ourselves. There was a playbook that you just followed, but it's hard to know when to listen and when to listen to your own gut, especially if it's the first time round you're doing it. But if you're going into a category like you are, where you're building it out, then there are no rules really. So I think you're right. A lot of the stuff just doesn't apply.
I think the biggest thing, an opportunity that comes from being a D2C business, is the ability to test on small scale and that has been a game changer for the business, is almost a shift in mindset away from decisions that each and every one of them felt so big, major, such a big percentage of maybe the money that you have in the bank, deciding to do an activation, or they really need to pay back when they are in some of the more traditional channels because they're so expensive and the rate of sale is not guaranteed and there's not that much data to give you information back to learn from. Whereas online, you have the benefit of being able to do really small experiments to get a data point that then gives you confidence to then grow. So that mindset shift to being able to take risks and test and experiment and fail fast is a big part of this kind of confidence that has come in what it is that we need to do, because we have the ability to test things in a small way.
And talking of bigger decisions or risks, you recently did a rebrand. That must have felt scary after years of building something. And it's quite a big change, isn't it? It's like a different shaped bottle, very different look and feel. What triggered that?
It's been on the cards for years. It's been on the cards for years, but the pandemic got in the way. So the initial bottle actually worked unbelievably well for, particularly for direct consumer. And it did a good job of explaining who we are, that a connection to an old school drink. The recipe has its roots in ancient Greece. It's got this almost medicinal quality to it, this connection to tinctures and tonics that people would enjoy in the same way that at the time when alcohol was first discovered, it was enjoyed almost for its medicinal feel-good properties. So it spoke to that sort of herbalist history. But with an eye on where we were going in the future, I could see that the bottle on a shelf is absolutely tiny and would struggle to stand out within the category. So I knew that at some point quite a serious transformation was going to be required. I wanted to get that done earlier rather than later, because it's the more you're building your brand or the more you want to invest in building your brand, you're holding yourself back on being able to do that when the identity isn't quite as it needs to be. So the plan was to do it back in 2021, but then with the pandemic and then Ukraine war, we had real struggles to get the bottle and the glass supply in place. So we had to just put it on pause. And then as we were scaling and focusing on D2C and actually took a step back and said, right, retail isn't going to be for the next few years. It actually was probably a blessing in disguise. We could then fully focus on the sales, marketing, communication, rather than worrying about the brand. So the brand look, obviously the brand is more than just the packaging, but rather than the bottle. And then also with more data and more consumer insights informed the rebrand that we then just went through. The deadline was knowing that we were going to go into retail in January. So we wanted to make sure that we were going in with the new look. So there's lots of moving parts all at the same time. And we were launching at peak, which was just forecasting supply chain, I would say nightmare, but the team managed it unbelievably well to do that transition from December into January into retail. And we were left with barely any bottles of the old stock left. So that was incredible. Yeah.
Nice. So it doesn't sound like it felt like a kind of personally hard decision, because it was something you knew you wanted to do.
There were plenty of people who said, why have you done this? I really love the old bottle and I really don't like the new bottle. And that hurts when you get those messages, because I feel really connected to our customer base. And I absolutely went in knowing that would be the case. Everyone tells you people don't like change, and it's so true. But for all of the comments that we've had of people not liking it and I'm decanting it into the old bottle, we've had so many of the opposite, saying that it really feels special and they love the beveled edges and it's lovely to hold and it feels more in line with the kind of evening drink occasion and it's much more differentiated. And then when we go into retail and we see it standing proudly next to the other products on the shelf, it just stands out. It's much more differentiated, which is really important.
I guess that's a sign you've got a very passionate community. If someone is decanting something into the old bottle, they love that brand, I think they'll get over it.
I think it's strange because even though we live and breathe it, sometimes I really struggle to remember what it looked like 6 months ago, which is very odd. Having been in the packaging for 5 years, I can't remember.
So that's also probably a good sign, isn't it? What you've changed to is right. But you're right, people just don't change. It can be anything. And packaging is so hard because it's so subjective and people have really strong opinions about it, which aren't actually reflective of how they shop either. So that's why it's quite hard to test, because if you ask someone to look at something, they'll give you a bit of a grilling and rip it apart. But actually, that doesn't reflect their behaviour when it comes to standing at the fixture. So it's a tough one.
Very tough. And there will be some changes down the line. It's not perfect. There are some things I want to tweak, but we're going to leave it be for a while, because it is a huge undertaking. It distracts from so many other things that you can do. So I would always caution people who think that the rebrand is the solve for marketing problems elsewhere. I was really pleased that we did delay it for 2 years, because we figured a lot out in terms of how we scale marketing, and it wasn't related to the branding, the look, the visual identity. It was related to comms more, and understanding how we run our advertising strategy. The branding is really something that can be improved from all of the insights that you get from really understanding your customer. So really, I speak to some founders who want to do a rebrand quite early on before they've really understood kind of the product market fit of the business. And I would just say, don't go there. It's so expensive. It's so time consuming. Please invest your time in understanding your customer. And yeah.
Let the market decide and tell you, and then you have to listen, but you need to give it a bit of a chance to get that feedback, like you say. So let's talk a bit more broadly about the category. So Nanark has obviously exploded in recent years. How do you see that evolving from here?
You're right. The non-art category has exploded. I think there's hundreds of new brands every day, it seems, that are coming out. That being said, I think it's still so early in the kind of category's future stage. It's really a blank canvas, and that's really exciting. And I think that we're in a position to write the future of where it's going, which I absolutely love. And that's where I find my energy. I think first out the gates was the replicas, the like for, but now where we're seeing it develop is as people have come in and shopped around and understand that they are searching for a non-alcoholic option, they want more. So they're looking at drinks that deliver more flavor, ones that kind of just deliver the look, but not aren't then backed up with a punchy flavor or complex flavor. They don't get the repeats, and people aren't coming back because actually they don't deliver on a really important part of the whole experience, which is that like satisfying flavor, that kind of moment when you have your first sip. And also people care about what goes in their body. They look at the back of pack. They are one of the main motivations for moderating and cutting back is related to their health. It's part of a holistic approach to their health. It's not just one swap that they're doing. They're across everything, the way they shop, they're more curious to know what goes in their body. And certainly from our customer, they're very pragmatic about their health. They're not necessarily chasing a fad. They view that health, that food is nutrition and food is health. And so they're having more beans in their diet and maybe a little bit less meat, but also cutting back on alcohol, they're not necessarily completely teetotal either, but they're just making sensible choices. And so I think there is this higher expectation from the customer. They want more and they're more curious to explore within it. So there's huge opportunity to deliver more value. So I'm seeing it going in. You've got your analog products, your replicas of alcohol, but then this different direction, which is more flavor-based, that doesn't necessarily need to represent an equivalent alcoholic drink, but just as bold and interesting and complex. And also functional, and that could be a nutritional function or a kind of something to give you a buzz function, which is a different customer to ours altogether. As I said, our customer is very pragmatic. They're not seeking to have something buzz them. They actually would be quite averse to having too many weird ingredients on back of pack. They look for simplicity and things that they understand and things that have, you know, that are maybe based on ancient wisdom, that have centuries of experience to back up what we're saying, rather than things like your CBDs or your THC. That's quite a different customer to ours.
And do you think, I feel like over the last year or so, there's been a bit of a shift in consumers being willing to pay more for non-alc. It felt like initially one of the reasons for drinking less is health, the big one, but there was this sort of, and I'm going to save some money because booze is really expensive here. And I feel like that was a problem for the non-alc category. But then recently, it seems like that is shifting. And there's this sort of growing acceptance of alternative ingredients and being willing to pay more for things in that category. Is that something that you've seen? Do you think that's helped you get to this moment?
I think definitely people are willing to pay for something that is worth the money. And I think that they are not if it's not. So it's really important that good products are out there. And the more good products that come into the category that deliver the value that they are promising to deliver, the more, as you say, the more people will be willing to see that it's something worth spending their money on. So I think the big risk for the category is if there's too many products that don't deliver on the value that they're promising and are seeing this as an opportunity to have a high product margin, but no flavor or no added benefit, which is what people are seeking. So that can really erode the trust. But thankfully, there are more and more good products, people really exploring techniques that are being adopted from alcoholic fermentation techniques, but being applied in a new way to non-alcoholic drinks. Or, as I said, exploring how can we get functional mushrooms into our drinks, because people are really seeking to find ways that fit into their daily ritual that they can enjoy drinking these novel ingredients in. And for us, it's about bringing complex flavor, but additional benefits that make you feel good in a way that is an enjoyable and indulgent way. And those things people are willing to pay for because they fit into the daily ritual of their life. And also feeling special is a part of that wind down moment. You've got a busy life, probably busier than ever, especially when you hit a certain age in your 40s and 50s, and you deserve something that is delicious. And that's that premium experience from the quality of the product that you are gifting to yourself, because often it's gifting to yourself, and that brief moment of pause or the moment of celebration with friends, that is important and that is worth investing in. And so I think people are willing to say it's more like an investment in themselves. And I think that is important when life is hectic and it is about a treat and an indulgence.
You mentioned an age bracket there, 40s and 50s, which brings us nicely onto my next question. You shared something on LinkedIn recently about how the non-alc conversation often ignores older women, even though they're massively driving these big shifts. So are they a key part of who you're building for? How did you find them? How do you speak to them? How do you connect with them in a way that feels true? Because I know it's becoming, there being more awareness, this is an age group that's being ignored, and actually they're a very valuable consumer. But I still think a lot of the brands who are talking to them are doing it in quite a tokenistic way. They've slapped on a persona and within their deck and put out something pink and think that's enough.
It's a good question. I think we just feel really connected to our customer as a team. And we have about 10 customer calls, like phone calls, Zoom calls with them every week. And we feel a genuine love and obsession with who they are, the things they've achieved in life, and a respect for them. And I feel like the majority of our customers are women and 40 plus, many 50 plus. And you hear the stories of what they've done in their life and what they've achieved. And they are bold and interesting people and have a love and a lust for life. They are vibrant and hopeful and optimistic. And this just inspires us in terms of how we then, the sort of content that we create is directly inspired by those conversations. So it's not like we've built a persona and we have an idea of maybe what, like, that are based on stereotypes. We're genuinely speaking to these women every day, and they are the ones who inspire the creative ideas when it comes to our content. So whether that's long form essays about what it means to live a bold and vibrant life, dinner parties, talking to strangers, being more connected with your friends, like the trials and tribulations, like we go quite outside of the drink. We have just one product, mostly 90% of what we do, more is just one product. So it's, we speak to that lifestyle, we speak to their hopes, their aspirations, what they're seeking to achieve and some of the struggles that they're going for. So it's much more kind of empathetic and like we're them, they're us. It's a two-way conversation. And then when it comes to the branding, no, I mean, it was about trying to bring that sense of optimism. So the yellow color of the sun, it's the sunrise, it's the sunset. It's that ritualistic symbol that is very rooted in nature, in simplicity, in energy, vitality, but it's not in a twee and a sort of super female, feminized way. So it has the ability to grow and build over time. But I think one of the things that we've done is started a TikTok channel, which might feel unusual because most people say that the older generation isn't on TikTok, which is not true. They are, and it's growing quickly. But what we took away from doing all of our customer calls is how obsessed we are with people who are of an older generation, people who've been there, done that, who have so much wisdom to share, but we never hear from them. They're not platforms, they're not the ones who are celebrated, they're not in a 30 under 30 list, they're old and past it, and we just don't hear from them. So I really wanted to share their wisdom, and we have a TikTok account that's not a brand account, it's called A Dose of Good Feelings, which is our tagline. It's what we're here to do. We're here to spread a dose of good feelings and bring a dose of good feelings into the world, and we're carving out a little niche on TikTok, which can be so toxic, to bring a dose of good feelings to people. And the stars of it are majority women and some men, but women of 50, 60 plus sharing a little snippet of advice from their experience in life. And it's really flying, and it's helping for us to share what we're about and the vision that we have and what we want to bring in a very authentic way by platforming them. So making it about them.
I love this so much. I feel like you guys are probably the best, one of the best examples that I can think of a brand that's engaging really well with this audience and talking 10 a week conversations. That's a lot. So it's really clear that you're making it a priority as a business, and it's obviously really working for you as well. So I just think that is brilliant, and it's very refreshing to hear, because I think across the board, in across different categories in FMCG, there's just this obsession with Gen Z and it's weird. And when I was younger, it was millennials. And then now they're too old. Yeah. Do you have a sort of opinion on why that is?
I guess my assumption is that people want to get the consumer in early and then have a longer lifetime value or ability to have a customer that's sticking with them for a longer period of time. Rather than us seeing people in age demographics, it's very attitudinal, and I think that's quite timeless. We're not seeking to attach ourselves to trends. It's much more, and I think that's centering ourselves into those cues that are and values that are quite ancient, like simplicity and optimism and hope and generosity, sharing health. Those are things that people will grow into. That I have no fear that at the right age, the younger generation, who at the point where they will be seeking these things in their life when they get to that hectic time, which happens to everyone, that this will speak to them. But I think that it might just be a misplaced sort of strategy to get them early so we can have them for longer, without it being based on necessarily like longer term set of values and understanding for who you are.
I also don't think many people are still using the same products, buying the same products that they were 15 years ago. I can see why people think that, but also I'm just not sure that's true, especially if it's associated really strongly with a period of your life. You're going to grow up and grow out of it, aren't you? Whereas, and I like the fact that you're building something that's aspirational in a really healthy, positive way as well. So all those values that you've just listed is something that is quite ageless and timeless, and that you'd hope that younger people would see that content too and find that aspirational and inspirational, and that's having a really positive impact in what can be a channel.
Definitely. I think it's that sense of being part of a club or a community that expresses who you are, and that sense of identity. And I think that's the power of a brand, that what we are, obviously we have a product, but beyond that, the power of the brand is to really enable people to express who they are by buying into what we represent and what we hold dear, as long as you're shouting about it loudly enough. Yeah, I think it's very powerful, potentially very powerful.
Yeah, I agree. So a few sort of general business building questions as we get close to the end. So what are the biggest challenges or biggest challenge you've faced along the way these past 6-9 years?
There have been so many. In the early days, I think it was really with time to reflect, I was too slow in making decisions, too nervous to make decisions. And I tried too much all at once. So there's been a couple of times where I nearly ran out of money in the business and it was incredibly stressful. And I had to make really brilliant people redundant along the way because I hired a team wanting to do every single sales channel and not really managed people before, and understanding that as soon as you hire people, the time that I would have had to do certain things goes on to actually managing a team, and then just things don't pan out as you had put in your forecast. And yeah, things like that, which are horrendous and very stressful, those are the biggest challenges. I think it's related to spending too much money and then not having enough revenue coming in. I think that's quite a basic one. But no, keeping things really simple has been my massive learning over the time, and focused. And also, yeah, like I said, it's about that mindset of experiment small, test, then scale, and just being very hot on your data. That's another thing that I've learned over time. I love data. It doesn't tell you everything, but it can really give you confidence on starting to take bigger risks, which actually feels good when you start to do them and they work out in your favor.
This is probably a related question, but what do you know now that you wish you knew 6 years ago?
Wish I had more confidence in my own decisions. I wish I asked for more help. I think now my network has grown, so it might be easy for me to say. I have much more awareness of people who I can go and ask questions of, or who's basically, if I need operational help, I now know that it's operational help that I need. Whereas maybe 6 years ago, I just struggled along doing it myself. I don't think I can have any regrets, because all I've learned along the way was important lessons that I just didn't have awareness of back then. But definitely, I think speaking to people, building out a network, getting help in the areas that they have the expertise in and you don't, so you learn a bit faster and you can move faster, at the same time having more confidence to believe in your own decision making.
I love this. I feel like it's really been really good advert for taking things slowly in a way, and because you can, I think it's really easy as a business to burn out literally, and also like we just said, spending too much money, run out of money, that can be it. So just hanging on and staying and keeping going sometimes, and knowing that you're learning and growing, and then you get to this brilliant moment where suddenly you've bag some big retail listings and everything's starting to fly, but that comes from all of that slow years of working things out, and now you've worked them out.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more challenges coming along the way. I've got no doubt about it, and they hit us every day. We're on this growth trajectory now, a lot of this has been us understanding how we scale our paid social marketing. But the next challenge for us as we grow further is bringing in more brand, which is less kind of direct marketing and more awareness, which is exciting, but that's a new challenge for us. But we'll take it. I think that the same mindset applies, and that same rigor of test and learn and be okay to fail and doing things in a small way before we do things in a bigger way will be applied. But it's a new area of marketing that we're delving into and beginning to try and understand what that means for us.
It's exciting. I love, there's a expression that I love, test, learn, pivot, grow. And I feel like it sounds like the Mother Root way as well.
Yeah.
What's the future for Mother Root? What's your vision?
It's a big vision. I feel emboldened. The last 6 years have been hard, but I feel like we're really doing things differently. I feel so fueled by our community and their obsession with the product, and how differentiated we are, even to all the number of products that are out there. We're doing things in our own way and building our own lane. And the future, the tailwinds are massive. Already 75% of the global adult population is moderating their alcohol, which is massive. And I think there's space for Mother Root in every drinks cabinet. So there is no limit to my ambition. We talk about that mission that we have, which we say is to redefine what it means to drink well and feel good. And so often, and the conversation around moderation has been about sacrificing something, pleasure, enjoyment for health. And we envisage a future where that is completely eliminated, that sense of sacrifice, and that you don't have to choose between one or the other. And that is through our product, where we have the powerful, robust flavors that is akin to what we enjoy from alcohol, with the burn and the boldness and the bite from the vinegar. It's something that is definitely adult, but we have the ingredients that also help support your health. And in a special evening ritual that is important, that sort of stimulates conversation with your partner, a true connection with people, or just like an opportunity to treat yourself. Big ambitions for where we can go as a brand. It's very exciting.
It's really exciting. I can't wait to watch. I have no doubt that that's going to happen for you guys as well. So final question that we ask everybody. In your opinion, what makes a brand of tomorrow?
So I've had some time to think about it. And for me, what makes a brand of tomorrow is understanding that your product is only the beginning, and your job as a brand is to help people express who they are.